Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning, honorable members. Maybe just there's one new member of our team today, which the committee, actually two new members which the committee might not have seen. To my right is Vanuja Maharaja. She's our new corporate executive responsible for, amongst others, our business unit at national level, and then she's also responsible for the KwaZulu-Natal province and also for the Eastern Cape province in the Auditor General. And then to my left is Faisal Jogi. From time to time, the senior managers have to rotate on the audits. One of the key reasons is for independence purposes. So Tiens will be rotating off this audit, and then in future you will be seeing Faisal during our engagements. Chairperson, can I just check with you, how much time do we have for our presentation?
Okay. Yes. I thought members were suggesting how much time we're going to have with the Honorable Wilson and Honorable Matloba. In that arrangement, it will come after Mayor Wilson.
Thank you, Chair. This is obviously a very, very important session, and anything that revolves around finance is not something we can resolve in an hour. My suggestion is, and we've got time and we're sitting for 2 days, can we give them as much time as they actually need?
Honorable Maloma and Honorable Bebel, I acknowledge you.
Thank you, Chair. I was suggesting an hour because there is nothing that we're going to change with them. It's a finding. They're going to point to us on the key areas of our oversight that we'll deal with. It's not something that we're going to interrogate them. The people that, because they are preparing us so that we interrogate the department. I thought that when they are given an hour, they will direct us to the areas that are more important.
Two opinions, Honorable Beth?
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and everybody present. Yes, I've been covered by the previous speaker. Thank you.
So, how much time? 1 hour?
Yeah.
But I think, may Honorable Wilson, 1 hour is quite enough. I thought of it, but I was giving it to you. But I think it accommodates you because it's plenty time. They also have to go to other committees. Mm-hmm. Can we then be on flight? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. 1 hour is actually sufficient for us. I was just concerned that maybe there was, because you mentioned time constraints. Honorable Chairperson and members, if we can start with the presentation, just by way of introduction, just to highlight again the role of the Auditor General and why we are here today. If you look at our reputation promise, the Auditor General exists as a supreme audit institution in terms of the Constitution, and we exist to strengthen the country's democracy and to enable oversight and accountability and governance. Now, the Portfolio Committee is an oversight committee, and therefore, in the context of what the committee is now doing in terms of its annual program for the BRRR, we are here to discuss with you the audit outcomes and to enable you to actually exercise your oversight and to enable you to complete your BRRR report. So we are hoping that through this presentation we will be empowering you to execute that function. The next slide is just to remind us all of the Sustainable Development Goals, and this links also very closely with the performance information, which is one of the key areas which we focus on during the audit process. So it's always very important to just bear in mind that it starts off every year with the annual performance plans, where very specific targets have to be set in those annual performance plans. And all of those targets that are set must ultimately relate to the medium-term strategic framework, to the national development plan, and the link with the sustainable developmental goals. So it's very important then also in your further oversight functions throughout the year when you were looking at the APPs again, that you keep that in mind. Our theme for this year is accountability. Because we believe if we can improve accountability, that will ultimately lead to better audit outcomes. And the next slide actually explains it for us in a bit more detail. So key in the accountability chain is that one should start off by doing proper planning. Accounting officers should do proper planning. They should define the targets. The next thing is that they must make sure that there's a control environment that will manage the whole environment. Performance information, compliance with legislation, as well as the financial information. And it's very important to implement the basics on a day-to-day basis, to make sure that things are being done on a day-to-day basis, to realize upfront when action is needed to ensure that something happens and to make sure that the actual target is achieved on time. Then there's monitoring by the various assurance providers in the cycle that's important. And there's the various levels of assurance providers, and we will deal with them a bit later on slide 15. But as you know, the committee is one of the levels of assurance providers. Very important is in this cycle, and that's part of our theme, is there must be consequence management. There must be consequence management for poor performance. There must be consequence management where there was irregular or fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And there must be consequence management when there's any other negative audit findings which have an impact on the audit outcomes. If an accounting officer manages this process right up until point five, it should ultimately result in a situation where there's better audit outcomes and better results. And that should ultimately have a positive impact for the citizens of South Africa. The next part of our presentation just quickly deals again with what do we focus on during the audit process, and I just would like to highlight to you again the various opinions that we express, because that will help you with the rest of the presentation. So you will recall that if you look at an audit report, a typical audit report, that the Auditor General normally reports on three areas. The audit of the financial statements, and we express an opinion on the financial statements. Do we believe those financial statements are fairly stated, or did we have any findings that we brought on the audit report on the financial statements which will lead to a qualification? Then we focus on performance information, which is in the annual performance reports, which is part of the annual reports, and there our main focus is on whether that information is credible and reliable, and if there's any findings on that, we will then also report it in the audit report. Lastly, our focus is on compliance with laws and regulations, and not all laws and regulations, but specifically those ones that deals with financial matters and with performance management. Just to highlight again the various audit opinions that we express, and before I discuss it in a bit more detail, there's a handout that we've made available to the committee members. It looks something like this. It deals with the changes in the audit report. The Auditor General has many years ago adopted international standards of auditing. So whenever one of those standards change, then we also have to change the way in that we report. So basically what happened is that the audit report standard changed, and it changed actually very positively. So if you look in the annual reports now of the entities at the audit report, you will see that the key change is now that the first page of the audit report starts off immediately with the audit opinion, because that is what you are really interested in. And if there are any qualifying items, it will follow immediately after the opinion. That's the one of the key changes from a user's point of view. There are also some other technical changes then which deals with the role of the Auditor General and the role of the accounting officer, which then follows in the rest of the audit report, which deals with some of those issues in a bit more detail. There's one other key change, but it will not affect this committee specifically at this point in time, and that is that the new standards make provision for something which they call key audit matters. But currently it's only applicable to listed public entities. So some of your big state-owned entities, you will see it there. And that key audit matters now requires that the auditor should actually document in the audit report areas we had to put in significant audit effort on difficult audit items. So we'll have to describe for you there which were the areas, what did the auditor actually do to audit those areas. But currently it's not applicable to national departments and your normal schedule A and C listed and even B listed entities in the Public Audit Act. Then there's also a section in the audit report that would deal with if we find any inconsistencies between what is in an annual report and what we found during the audit. So we always check for that, and if we find material inconsistencies, we will first of all communicate with management and ask them to change it to our satisfaction. If they don't change it to our satisfaction, you will see a heading in the audit report where we will actually be dealing with it, and we will highlight to the user to say, note that statement that management is making in the annual report is not consistent with what we found during the audit process. That's just to highlight for you the major changes in the audit report. So if we then go back to the audit opinions, in the slide presentation you'll see we use green a lot. So when we talk about the outcomes, the green part is the section that deals with what we called, have termed now for a number of years, clean audits. It's an unqualified audit opinion with no findings. No material findings on compliance with laws and regulations, and no material findings on performance information, and no material findings on the financial statements. That's what we call unqualified with no findings, or a clean audit report. Our second category, the yellow category, is financially unqualified opinion with findings. So financially, we are satisfied, no material findings, but there could be possible findings on either compliance with laws and regulations or either on the performance information. The next category then starts to deal actually with qualifications. And there we get three scenarios. The first one is just a normal qualified opinion. That is when we as auditors are not satisfied with one or two items in the financial statements where it's not fairly stated. We will then say that the financial statements are fairly stated except for, and we will highlight in the next paragraph the issues which we are not satisfied with. Next category that we get is an adverse opinion. An adverse opinion we will express in cases where we've got a significant disagreement with management. And this, on the figures in the financial statement, and that is, we use the term pervasive, that is when there's a lot of financial statements item that we disagree with management. In that case, the opinion would actually then say that we disagree with management. The last category is the disclaimer of audit opinion, and we express a disclaimer of an audit opinion in cases where we have what we call in our terms a scope limitation. We could not get the necessary documentation and explanations to satisfy ourselves that a disclosure in the financial statement is accurate and complete. And again, we use the term pervasive. It means it must be, if it's one or two items, it will be a qualification. But when it's pervasive throughout the financial statements, we will then express a disclaimer of an audit opinion. And the wording actually says, because of this, I do not express an opinion. So it actually means in that case, we do not express an opinion at all. Our next section is then most probably the most important section for today's presentation, and it deals with the actual audit outcomes. And you'll see on the heading of the slide, it's a regression in the audit outcomes. And the reason for that is that if you look in the 16-17 year, you'll note that there is one entity that has got a qualification. So we've got the department, which is a clean audit. We've got the NDA, which is unqualified financially, but there are some issues on compliance and performance information. And then we've got SASSA, which was qualified. And SASSA was qualified based on one item only, and that is the completeness of irregular expenditure. So there were specific requirements in supply chain management that were not complied with, and it deals with the local content requirements and the impact was that that they didn't comply with that specific requirement. Therefore, you have to go and look at all those transactions mm-hmm. where you didn't comply. You need to add them all up. You need to put them all into the financial statements. And we've given the department the opportunity to do adjustments, and the department was not, and SASSA, mm-hmm. apologies, and SASSA was not able to, in that space of time, able to satisfactorily include all the irregular expenditure mm-hmm. and therefore the qualification on the complete. And so it relates to one item only. Very important just to note that we've got a note at the bottom there. In this portfolio, there are those small funds, disaster relief fund and social relief fund and refugee fund. We don't specifically deal with them in this presentation. Some of them are dormant and some of them are very small. Most of they also don't have any performance information that are being reported on. So they actually all basically clean audits, if you want to put it like that, but not all the requirements of the legislation are applicable to them. So in the rest of the presentation, we're not gonna deal with them. If you look at the right-hand side of slide 12, it then deals with compliance with laws and regulations, and you will note that the key non-compliance with laws and regulations was then in the supply chain management environment for the NDA and for SASSA. And then there was another finding for SASSA that SASSA did not ensure appropriate consequence management. And that's why we also highlighted consequence management earlier on. So it's very important in cases where there are irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure that those cases being investigated. It's a requirement of the PFMA. The PFMA has got four requirements. It firstly determines you must prevent irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Secondly, you must detect it. Thirdly, you must disclose it in your financial statements, and fourthly, you must investigate it. So in the case of SASSA, those investigations are not taking place. If you look at the performance information on slide 13, you will note that when it comes to the quality of the performance information, whether the performance information is measurable and complies with the SMART principles, it's green, which means all three entities actually are doing very well when it comes to those specific requirements. However, then if you look on the right-hand side, you will see that the 67% there, the NDA and SASSA, had findings on performance information. And in the case of SASSA, it specifically relates to Program 2, and it relates specifically to the target that deals with the percentage of disputed deductions from grant payments. So we were not satisfied that the information that was disclosed there with regard to that specific target was accurate. And in the case of the NDA, it relates to all the items in all the indicators in Program 2 and Program 3, where we had findings with regard to completeness and accuracy. The next slide then deals with, if we look at internal controls, what is it in the internal control environment that leads to these findings that we have discussed? And the focus should be on the yellow and let's call it the red, it is in those environments that specific attention then should be given in terms of action plans going forward to ensure that those specific controls are enhanced to ensure that the control environment will change to be able to get a better audit outcome. And a key focus should be on policies and procedures with regard to supply chain management. If that can be addressed, it should change the environment with regard to supply chain management and prevent supply chain management findings in the future. Then there's also some work that needs to be done on the information technology environment. It remains a risk area. And specifically, if you look in the context of SASSA, the data that that SASSA has to manage, it's very important that all the risks in the IT environment are being addressed. The next slide then deals with the various levels of assurance, senior management, accounting authority, executive authority, internal audit, the audit committee, and then the portfolio committee itself. So one will note that there's focus needed at senior management level. That's the first level. Very important that the entities at the first level make sure that it's the necessary assurance provided by management at that level. And that relates a lot to day-to-day controls. You will note then that there's a yellow for the audit committee for the department. And that basically relates to the fact that the department for a certain period of time did not have a functioning audit committee. It's been rectified since, but during a large portion of the year there was no functioning audit committee. Audit committees are very important to ensure proper governance, and specifically in terms of the PFMA, audit committees are there to control and direct internal audit. So it's very important to make sure that there's always a fully functioning audit committee. Then we also assess the portfolio committee, and if you look at the block on the right-hand side, we've just given to you the key areas that we focus on and when we evaluate the portfolio committee. And you will see that basically relates to the core function of the portfolio committee. And in our assessment, the portfolio committee has focused on all those key areas, and therefore we give the portfolio committee a green. Thank you. Water. Jefferson, the next slide is just this is just a summary from the annual reports of the various entities. So the first one deals with the department. So what we've done is here, we've basically focused on the performance information, and we've listed the programs, and we've indicated which of these programs we have audited, and we've indicated for you which of these programs we had material findings in and which ones we didn't have material findings in. So if you look at the department, you will see that we have no material findings there, therefore the clean audit. We also indicate that there is no requirement for us for them to make any material adjustments to the performance information. And then we focus a bit on the budgets and the actual amount spent. Now this will also assist the committee in its oversight function, because you have to consider how much of the budget has been utilized against the actual performance. And that is key for oversight for the portfolio committees to ask strategic questions around that relationship. So we try to assist the committee by providing this slide, and then we actually just indicate the number of targets planned, the number of targets achieved. But it's important that you go and look in the detail in the annual report, because in the annual report there's also a column where the entities must explain the reasons for the variances. So whether if they've overachieved, they must explain why they overachieved. If they underachieved, they must explain why they underachieved. And that is important for the committee, because you must also test those reasons in line with your experience of your in-year oversight that you've exercised. And then, of course, in developing action plans going forward, it's important that the committee then also takes note of that. The next slide then deals with the similar picture in the case of SASSA, and you will just note there that for SASSA then on program two, when we talk about reliability, you will see that we've indicated that for accuracy, we could not confirm the accuracy of that one specific indicator that I've discussed with you earlier on. But you will note here, if you look at program two, you'll see spending is at nearly 104%, but achievement of target is much lower. So the next slide deals with the NDA. Yes, just a small correction. What you see on the screen is correct. You will see for program two and program three, we say there were material findings, and it's red. But if you look at your slides, you will see it's green. Our apologies for that. Just write for yourself there, red. So that is the area that needs to be focused on with regard to the NDA, specifically to get those information reliable in those two programs. The next area deals with financial health. Now, in financial health, our focus is to highlight to the committee if there's potential areas of concern when it comes to the financial health of the institutions that you exercise oversight with, because it's important as part of the budgetary review process that you are aware of risks with regard to financial health. Now, we've highlighted that there's some risks with regard to financial health for both the department and for SASSA. And if you look at it in a bit more detail, you'll see that for the department, it basically relates to the debtors. Where there's old debt. Now, currently, departments are not required to bring the debts into the balance sheet of the department. It's still in a note because the departments are still on the modified cash basis. But what we are saying is, if one would have to apply the draft principle and saying, let's bring that debt that's impaired onto the balance sheet, you will then find yourself in a difficult position. So it's very important that old debt should be dealt with appropriately. And then the department is also finding itself in a position where there are accruals that are older than 30 days. Remember, it's a requirement of the Treasury regulations that you must pay them within 30 days, and one must keep an eye on it that number doesn't get too big. Because remember, whatever they do not pay from this year's budget must be paid from next year's budget, because that's currently still on the cash basis of accounting. So one must just keep an eye on that. With regard to SASSA, SASSA reported a net loss for the current year. The net cash flows from operating activities were negative. In other words, the more cash had to be paid out than cash that came in. And also the period to recover debtors has increased. You know, the older a debtor gets, the more difficult it becomes actually to get back your money. So there should be continuous focus on debtors. In the case of the NDA, there's no concerns that we've identified. What we suggest is that we say that in the case of the department, you know, how it works in the department is for you to be able to write off debt, you must have surplus funds available. Mm-hmm. So if those debtors are at the point where it cannot be recovered anymore, then the department should try to work towards a situation with National Treasury that additional funds are being made available so that debtors can be written off and be taken off from the books. It's going to be difficult because National Treasury currently will not easily make additional funds available, but the department must at least try, even if it's over a number of years, to get rid of that book, because if it can't be recovered, to just keep it in the books will not be of any value. The next slide just highlights for us the compliance with legislation, and you will note that there's a regression in the compliance with legislation. That's mainly because there's a finding that had to be reported in SASSA on consequence management. And then this year we also had to report in on both SASSA and NDA on the management of procurement and contracts. When it comes to irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, it is a similar situation than last year, basically SASSA and the NDA that we have reported on. On the right hand side, it just indicates for us the qualification areas, and it it basically just indicates that there was one qualification area in SASSA, which was the completeness of the irregular expenditure. The two circles at the bottom just gives us a picture to say, if SASSA would have been able to resolve the qualification, then the right-hand circle would have been green all over. It means because there is an opportunity during the audit process to adjust financial statements. That's part of the normal audit process, but once an entity cannot within that window period make the necessary adjustments accurate and complete, then it will result in a situation that we see there that the outcome doesn't change after the adjustments have been made. The next slide is then a summary of the irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. You will note that there were no unauthorized expenditure. If we then look at the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, it started off 3 years ago with 5 million. It was 9 million last year, and this year it's 2 million. And we've given you the summary of the details there. The details of this is in the annual reports of the departments and the entities. There's always a note that deals with fruitless and wasteful and irregular expenditure. So for instance, if you look at the department, you will see it's on page 188 of the annual report. SASSA, it's in the CEO's report on page 14, being dealt with for irregular expenditure, and also for fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and also page 136 in the financial statements. Irregular expenditure was for 14-15 60 million. For 15-16 it was just over a billion, and for 16-17 376 million. And if you look at the details, you will see that the main contributor to the irregular expenditure is SASSA, and that's disclosed in page 187 of the annual report in note 24.2. For NDA, it's disclosed on page 77. The next slide deals with the item that I have discussed already on non-compliance, but we want to just focus again on consequence management. And we have reported in the audit report of SASSA that consequence management were not always done in relation to fruitless and wasteful expenditure and irregular expenditure. And that is very important because it's a requirement of the PFMA that these cases being investigated and that the necessary action being taken. Section 5 deals with the root causes. What results in these audit outcomes? And you will note that for NDA in this year, we say it's because of a slow response by management to deal with these issues. With regard to SASSA, instability in key vacant positions has definitely contributed to SASSA's outcomes. And then a lack of consequences for poor performance and transgressions for SASSA and for NDA. The middle block deals with the commitments from the minister, and we've indicated there which commitments have been achieved. The vacancies at senior level has been filled, but they became vacant again. And then the minister made new commitments during our meeting, and that was basically to monitor the implementation of the audit action plans. It's very important that each entity by now should have an audit action plan. What will they be doing to address these root causes and any other internal control deficiencies? Those action plans must have timelines. It will also be important for the committee, when you engage with the entities, to ask them, do you have an action plan? Can we see it? What are your timelines? Can we get the regular feedback in terms of these action plans to satisfy yourself that those action plans have actually been implemented? So in the right-hand column, we've made three proposed commitments to the committee that we believe if the committee focus on these three commitments from an oversight perspective, that it should have a positive impact. The first one is to monitor the progress by SASSA on the plans to implement the new social assistance payment model in terms of the Constitutional Court order. The second one is to monitor the implementation of the audit action plans, which I have discussed. And then the third one is to monitor the filling of the key vacant positions. It's very important that at the leadership level there's stability in all these institutions. The last part of the presentation just deals with some information that we want to share with the committee as well, and the first part just deals with that for the 16-17 year, there was a change in our audit methodology. We researched our audit methodology, we changed it a bit, and a lot of it is internally focused for us as auditors to work in a more integrated manner. The way that we work is our teams, we work with the performance auditors, and the IT auditors work very close together with the regularity auditors in our teams. It's how we assess the risks, make sure that we focus on the right risks, and that should ultimately help the committee also in its oversight, because we will then be reporting on those key risks and findings to the portfolio committee. Then there's another important change that will happen in the environment. Jefferson, you will recall that we have for a number of years now done these key control assessments, and then we would end up with a one-pager with smiley faces and not smiley faces, red, green and yellow, talking to very specific areas. So we've used that model for a number of years. And we have now developed a new model, and the reason why we're doing this is it's we want to contribute towards changing the audit outcomes. So the new model even goes a bit further and in a bit more in depth. So it means that throughout the year, normally with this new model will kickstart with the planning. So once we do the planning, after the planning, and during the planning, we will actually be focusing on very key areas. These areas that you see there in the circle, those key focus areas. We will focus on those areas. We will then already write the short report to the accounting officer or to the CEO and highlight and say, these are the following concerns. If an accounting officer then actually at that point in time goes and adjusts his action plan to also address those key areas that we identify, it should ultimately result in a change in the audit outcome. So it's very important that this mechanism be used by the accounting officers throughout the year to make sure that they prevent any negative audit outcomes. So the typical focus areas is, if you look at this presentation, it's most of what we've discussed today: oversight and monitoring, financial management, performance management, procurement and contract management, the key area, compliance management, human resource management, IT management, and then financial health. So we're hoping that this, what we call status of records review, that this will really be assisting the accounting officers. The last slide basically just highlights that it's a proactive process, and it just shows you that in the actual presentations that we will be making to the accounting officers, we will also use colors again, you know, which will mean if it's green, we haven't identified anything significantly. When it's yellow, there's matters that needs attention, and then when it's red, there's matters that actually needs urgent intervention. The last slide is just to talk a bit about the risk of corruption. What this slide is about is, if you look in government, there's normally a monopoly in government. There's only one Department of Social Development. There's only one SASSA. There's no competition. There's only one entity. Officials within these entities have a lot of discretion when they have to make decisions. But there must also be accountability. So in an environment where there's not a high level of accountability, it increases the risk of corruption. So the ideal situation that one wants to see is a situation where there's high accountability, because that will ultimately reduce corruption. And you will see that this fits in with our theme of accountability. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you very much for such an informative information. And then I will allow the Honourable Members to indicate if they want to engage in any way, whether it's clarification or whatever. I therefore recognize Honourable Bev and Honourable Masango for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and thank you to the AG's office for a very formative explanation, especially for us that's not glued up to the accountancy. It makes sense when you read your documents and so on. Thank you very much. I want to start with the last page. Corruption equals M plus D minus A, and linking it to your theme, which is so apt, that accountability, and it makes quite sense. I think I'm going to put this up everywhere I go and say, where does corruption come from? Because people always ask us as public reps, why is this person corrupt? Where does corruption? And you try and explain how it works, and you try and explain who is involved and how it happens. And people, so I will definitely, I'm going to social media, put it all over so people can have it seen. Thank you very much. Yes. Mine is just comments on the consequence management, and I want to say, year on year, every year when we sit and we listen, we hear that you know, you've given advice, you've done things. What is the, is there a monitoring system that you've mentioned everything that I actually want to ask? For instance, day on day, if you watch what you're doing, and then you can avoid all this. I come from the public sector, and you work from one month to the other month, and if you don't balance, you won't continue with the next month. So you won't go and sleep. I worked at the bank, and if we didn't balance, you'll stay there until you balance. And the question is, I always ask myself, is what's so different in the public sector from the private sector? Because it's the same people. You could go from this company to that company and you work. Why don't you follow the procedure and rules and regulations? So in a nutshell, Chairperson, my concern is, and I think I've asked this many years ago, the consequence management, which you've also alluded to. Why are people not listening? And you know, what can be done if you don't listen and you don't adhere to it? And why does it continue? Why is it allowed? I know I'm asking the wrong people, but I just want to know for myself. Why is it allowed that all these actions continue and the same people continue just doing what also, I think I'll rest there, because you've really just been very clear what you've said. And also, I just want to comment and say, I like your term, keep your eye on it daily. But it looks like the eyes has been taken off, because what's happening is, because that is normal. You must do your day-to-day, whatever you do. Mm. And then you can immediately pick up. If there's a problem, you won't be going into the next day. So thank you very much, and we appreciate your presentation. And we will definitely be more vigilant from our side as an oversight, although what is it that we can do? Because we don't go to the departments and sit there and see if day-to-day things have been done. We get our reports here, and we do our oversight on when we go out. And, you know, when you go oversight, you normally get everything okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I also want to thank the AG for the presentation. And as the Honourable colleague has said, it helps a lot to actually listen to this presentation. My questions are just as a matter of clarity, and the first one that I would like clarified on is on slide number 14, where it talks about the effective leadership being green. But what actually makes, I believe, what should make the effective leadership, because the big category is leadership, what should make the leadership effective is all sorts of colors except green. So I'm wondering what then informs us to say that the leadership is effective, as it were. Because if the things that are making up leadership, the function, were green, then it would follow that the leadership is effective. But I'm just asking for clarity on that point, Chair. And also I'm trying to make a link as well to motivate for the effective leadership if we are seeing regression, where we are saying that 67% of with material on slide 13, the slide before the one I was talking to earlier on. And the question I just jotted there was to say, so what is the overall or the overarching impression then of the, again, going to the leadership, what would then say, what would one get an impression of it if one just saw that slide that talks to regression and one was supposed to make some kind of a conclusion about the type of leadership that we're dealing with there. And of course, I'm very grateful that the portfolio committee is totally green, and I'm excited about that. And then, Chair, the other question goes to the where we talked about dormant entities. I just wanted to know, what does dormant mean? Does it mean there's nothing there, there's no money, there's nobody doing anything, there's no buying and selling or whatever? And so one would need to, as a portfolio committee, then find out why they are still in existence in any way. Chair, I think I'll just stop there for now. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation by Auditor General. As partners, I think they really assist us in the more important areas that we need to play our oversight on, and we appreciate that there are also even recommendations. But I want to check here. What is the reason for this regression in audit outcomes? I'm just asking whether is it because of what you presented as the change in the way you have been auditing, or there are repeat offenders on the findings that you have indicated that they need to be corrected, and they are not doing that. We appreciate that the department is really performing very well, but also these findings that you have identified to say that if they don't really respond, like paying within the specified time, they may also regress further. Yeah. So I think actually this report just assist us to have an effective oversight. There is nothing more. We appreciate the good work that you are doing all the time in the Office of the Auditor General.
Thank you, Chairperson. What I'm looking at is the methodology. We used to engage in the accounting officers in conversation. I would like to ask this question. Like we know, the accounting officer is the administrative head. Now, why are you not doing it to the executive authority that oversees politically? And then I think what will be important there too is your internal audit committee. You know, even if it's just the chairperson you're speaking to, because they will pick up these things within the audit and make it easier for you too. Because you see, it's keep the eye on the goal or the ball. And then I just want to ask, because every time I ask the department when it comes to BRRR about the dormant account, why is the AG not making a proposal on it? Because it comes up yearly within the department's report, every time it comes up into the BRRR. And then I would like to thank the department, I mean the audit, the AG's office, for the excellent work you are doing, because it really, like Dr. Mishlopa says, it really helps us when we do the oversight. Thank you.
Thank you very much for all the intervention we have already made. But I also want to appreciate the fact that I think our also input has been looked into by yourselves, because some of the matters that were not reported on are actually being reported. And I think the also the regression shows that there's more interrogation on matters which sometimes were just overlooked, yet they had a greater impact. The more scrutiny we put in as organs of the state, we will identify more weaknesses that might have been overlooked before. I also still, I know when we had discussions, the notion of an amount of funds allocated to a particular program also counts in you actually oversighting that. For example, I'm referring this to Program 1, because it has been our fight that Program 1 is not being audited, yet it is the engine of the department, in which case, if we are able to know what's happening in that area, then we will be able to be assured that the money and the funds are in right hands. I can still see here that it's not being audited. And I think the fact that it gets a particular percentage lesser than cannot be a good reason for the portfolio committee to say let them, because what if in your audit you find that a deputy director earns more to a director? Those irregularities, what if the executive authorities' offices have more than what is being prescribed by the ministerial handbook? What if more funds go to phone calls, even overseas? What if S&T is exaggerated? What if there are members who can claim above 30% of their salary? Because that part, the issue here is that Auditor General wants to ensure that funds are handled properly and for what they are made for, but at the same time, Program 1 remains for me as a very risk area that actually that applies the institutions to have a look into. But then I think you will respond. Ma'am Khosi, maybe can I was just trying to find out if food is not here. If it is, I will allow questions so that when we come, we just pick something and come back, because we also, members don't have breakfast when they come to these meetings. So I want them to be allowed to reinforce their energy. So I will allow Honorable Mkhosi to ask a question so that when we come back, those questions are answered. Thank you. Can I acknowledge Honorable Wilson when we come back? And Mama, soul, because now the questions that are going to be answered, they will be answered, and if you don't find expression of what you are going to ask, definitely you will take your time to ask those questions. Ma'am Khosi?
No, Chairperson, thank you. It's not a question. I just wanted to add on what you just added. You know, it's very a serious concern that is happening with the AGSA. Every year, Program 1 is not being audited. And it's not only in this committee. Yesterday, we have raised that with Honorable Zwalid in Arts and Culture. And there, we even told them now is the third year. Administration, when you do your sampling, I don't know why do you jump administration. So, Chair, the problem it won't go to them, but to the AGSA. And I'm worried, maybe it's not only this only two committees, because we are sitting in Arts and Culture and Social Development. Maybe even if in other committees, Program 1 is not being audited. And what Chair said is where the issue of organizational structure starts. How can you do sampling every time with other programs, maybe 3 and 4, and you leave 1 every year? So there is a problem, there is a big challenge that you are facing. We talk about issues of governance. They start there. How you as AG will come one day to say you want to do an integrated report, maybe for the whole department. How are you going to do that? Because you only focus with Program 3 or Program 4, and you leave Program 1. Whether the money you will follow, when you are doing your sampling, you will follow the money in Program 4. But the problem, the door is administration, is Program 1. What if the office of the minister, there is a problem there? Nobody saying something. What if they are having 20 staff members? How will you know? What if other programs are being shifted from Program 3 or Program 4, maybe to Program 1? E.g., let's talk about issue of program of project management unit. I'm not talking about the social development in general. Program management unit in most of the committees is a problem because it's where the supply chain things lies. How will you know that there's something happening? Because it is the unit that most people want it in a strategic offices, and you are not sampling Program 1. You are failing us. AG is failing us. We are not saying sample every year Program 1, but change. You can't follow your sampling only in Program 4 to the core. What are you doing about the staff placement? You are not sure how many people were hired. What if the whole department is 18? Then you will be saying to us in Program 2 under governance, it's where you check that there's a problem on the issue of permanent staff. But nobody did check. Social development, going to social development, it's having two structures as a department. Do you know about it? It's having two organizational structures. The one was signed, it went back from DPSA. They are having a structure that is not signed. You are not sure about the placing of human capital that is there because it's not being audited. So, Chair, I think the AG, maybe it's all chairpersons, you need to have a meeting with the AG just to check only the issue of administration. Maybe other members who are here can attest in their committee whether their Program 1 is being audited or not. But in our committees, Arts and Culture, and this one, it's never. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for your intervention. And I do want really, really that when we come back, the AG is able to attend to this matter. Because for us, it is rather urgent. Because you find that there is a deputy director and an assistant director who don't know what is being done by this other one. And you also, there's so much that makes the very organogram to be bloated, and also this issue of procurement won't be taught if within the department monitoring and evaluation doesn't have a senior manager that will have equal discussions at a senior level. So these matters, the procurement issue relies. What if one day we wake up with a, I know of a department when we had a HOD for health with only grade 12. It happened in this country. Before Honorable Mtswaledi came in, if you remember, that some had other experiences, but not the actual experiences that are required for them to oversight and to supervise doctors and the other qualified people who actually have more than masters. How does someone who is actually a little bit illiterate supervise over the academicians? So I think we, if it's a matter that in principle is about how much you need to look after, it then leaves a gap in terms of quality service. So I think we need to talk about this. And then, because it continues to be in this arrangement. For example, there are almost irrelevant units in some of the departments. Irrelevant units. I would refer you one day to check on the VIP of social development, security something. Cars, everything being allocated to those people, but you really don't know what they are doing. They themselves claim more than 30%. What are they doing? What if people don't do the work all the time, only to do it on weekends and public holidays in order to have to claim overtime? So I think this matter, we need to ensure that it's justifiable. But as a portfolio committee, we want to look after every cent we go and debate and lobby for to be given to the department. And then it becomes our responsibility then to come back and monitor if this has, there was value of money in what they were doing. Thank you very much. Can I request that we break? Probably it will give AG also to allocate which questions will be answered by who. But they are also invited to have something. I don't know how much we have. What we have in the spirit of non-wasteful... No, I said afterwards.
Dave, is your program on audited in sports? Last year was audited. Yeah, they want it. It's like they were told, don't audit the program. So I can confirm, because of the life of actually achieve what you want. How can Oma audit the loan box? Olande, Amatola, Mathematics, woman. The main box.
Hello. This is you. Okay. And this is one day, yeah.
Thanks.
I had requested the two honourable members who had their hands up that we will allow AG's office to respond to the other input. and then later on the two questions will be asked. And I will request Nozuko to ask the department to wait, because our first phase is this one. So they will come when we resume. We don't need them now. They can always hold their offices. Okay. The time is back to AG's office. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Thank you for all the questions. I will take the first question, and we've allocated, as the Chair has said, we've decided who will answer questions. My response to the first question related to, the question was on consequence management. Why do we have people that don't listen, and why people take their eyes off the ball, and the very, very basic work that needs to be done? Why are people ignoring the basic work that needs to be done? Now, in slide 15 and slide 14, it's quite an important slide, because it's telling you, at your senior management level, you're having people that are not responding to these basic controls. They're not having the sound financial disciplines. They're not complying with the relevant legislation that is meant to be done. And that is the level we expect most assurance from, because they are employed there. They have responsibilities to fulfill to ensure that indeed that the mandate of those relevant entities are met and are achieved as such. And I want to link that with our theme of accountability, where we are saying, now, why? So we are saying, if people continue doing or not held responsible, accountable for what they meant to be doing, now you're creating a culture, if I don't do my work, nothing is happening. So what do I do? Do I continue not doing my work? When is there that time there is going to be consequence management, where people take action for people? We are not happy about the fact that you are not doing your work. We are not happy about the fact that you have transgressed. We are not happy about the fact that you have not complied with the relevant laws and regulations. But if we keep the people in the system without taking action, what sort of culture are we creating? And I think that is the answer to the question, in terms of people have to be held accountable for what they are responsible for. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I will then deal with the rest of the questions. The first question was, why is the first section on leadership green, the one that deals with effective leadership? I think it's important that we just understand that. So under leadership, there's various dynamics that we look at. The first one basically just focus on the leadership culture and governance. You know, so from that perspective, we don't have any negative findings, and therefore it has to be green. But if you look at some of the other more important ones, you can see a direct link between that and the audit outcome. Oversight responsibility for SASSA, you'll see it's red. So it's just important to understand that the first one is, if I can put it differently, is maybe one of the softer elements of leadership. You know, in my experience, you'll seldom find that you'll get on that first level. You'll seldom find a red there. You will normally find the reds in oversight, HR management, and some of the other elements. The next question then dealt with dormant entities, and I want to link that. There was two questions on dormant entities. The first question is, what does it mean if an entity is dormant? And then there was a question to say, has the AG made any recommendations, or does the AG follow up on what happens with these dormant entities? A dormant entity, in this case, a dormant entity basically means it's an entity that is not doing business on a day-to-day. But if you look at these entities in the social development environment, there is funds there. So we've recommended a couple of years ago to the minister that the legislative processes should be followed, because they are there in terms of legislation, the Fundraising Act, if I'm not mistaken, which means that to close them, it must be done through a legislative process again. So that recommendation has been actioned. And if you look at page 16 of the annual report of social development, There's a paragraph there that's got the heading discontinued activities or activities to be discontinued, and it, I will read it for you in case you don't have the annual report yet. It reads that the amendment of the Fundraising Act is underway. It is envisaged that the consolidation of the Disaster Relief Fund, Social Relief Fund, Refugee Relief Fund and State Residence Fund will be concluded in the 17-18 financial year. Okay, so that one has, the recommendation has definitely been actioned. I think we made it 2 years ago and it has been actioned. Then there was a question about the reason for regression, and I think we need to reflect on this one. So if you look at the SASA environment, the regression was then mainly on supply chain management. And as I've indicated during the presentation, there were two areas of concern in supply chain, specifically in supply chain management. The one is so there's non-compliance, which leads to irregular expenditure, and that's disclosed in the financial statements. The qualification per se deals with completeness of irregular expenditure, and there's two focus areas. The one is the local content. That there's legislative provisions that one need to adhere to certain local content requirements when doing procurement. Initially, the department did not comply with it and did not identify all the cases. Subsequently, they managed to do that successfully. The other one, which then led to the qualification, is there's another requirement that when you engage with contractors, you need to make sure that they've got the right CIDB rating. And not in all cases was the right, what it verified whether it's Construction Industry Development Board, that's what CIDB stands for, so the Construction Industry Development Board actually gives the rating to contractors. That's a very important rating because it will give you an indication of what the size of the work is that a specific contractor should be able to do. So if you get a certain CIDB rating, you might not be allowed or able to do a very big project. So it's on that one where the department could not satisfy us that they've identified all the cases where they haven't complied. So it's the focus must therefore remain on supply chain management, and it has to do also a lot with your day-to-day controls and to do with training. And we must remember that in the case of SASA, it's decentralized over all 9 provinces. One can always debate what is the best, centralization or decentralization, but they've all got their pros and cons. So very important in decentralized procurement is that the head of procurement must have mechanisms in place to make sure that there's adequate training and controls in place in all the various regions where procurement are actually being done. Then there was a question on our methodology and that we engage with accounting officers, but do we engage also with the executive? Our visibility strategy actually is meant for us to engage with all levels. So we do engage with the executive when the executive is available. If the executive is not available, we actually write a briefing document, which we then submit with a covering letter to the executive authority as well. This that we've done for the previous internal control reviews and for the status of record review, we will again be following the same process. So we will cover all aspects. We discuss the status of records review or the key controls review. We discuss it with the CFO. We discuss it with the accounting officer, CEO, if they are available. Sometimes they're not available, but then we will submit a document for them to look at. We will discuss it with the audit committee. It's discussed at audit committee meetings. We will discuss it with the executive or send a briefing note to the executive. So we cover all levels in our engagement strategy. Audit committees, they are fully briefed, and therefore they are empowered to take the necessary decisions, and it will even assist them to when they approve the internal audit plans. It will, if the audit committees use the information that we give them, they will be able also to make sure that internal audit focus are at the right places. So from our point of view, we are making the relevant information available for all structures to be able to act on it. I think that brings us then to one of the key questions. Oh, there was a question about whether there was an impact from our methodology on the audit outcomes. The audit outcomes, as I've explained, is purely in the hands of management. How did they manage the supply chain management processes, and what checks and balances did they have in place? And it goes back to the earlier discussion. It's literally about daily controls when each and every procurement transaction takes place. So typically what we recommend is that in a supply chain management environment, there must be a checklist to help people, because procurement is not easy. There's a lot of things that you need to focus on whenever you're involved in any procurement contract. So most probably the easiest way is to have a checklist. Did you verify tax clearance? Did you verify CIDB rating? Did you make sure you've got a triple BEE certificate? Literally to do a checklist, and then for someone to independently review and sign off. So if I've done the procurement, my supervisor must independently review my procurement process, check the documentation, and ultimately sign off. Those are the typical controls that should be in that environment. Then there was the question about the auditing of Program 1. I think I need to clarify. Program 1, we do audit from a financial point of view. So it's not that we do not select transactions when we do the financial audit for Program 1. Program 1 is subject to the financial audit like any other program. Program 1 is subject to a compliance audit like any other program. It is only for the performance information that we do not select Program 1. And the reason for that is, if you look at the key service delivery program, that is what we focus on. So from a financial point of view, from a compliance point of view, we do focus on Program 1. But there's various elements that was raised in the questions, and I just would like to talk about some of them. So there was a concern raised, for instance, about the shifting of funds. So in the set of financial statements, there's an appropriation statement, and that appropriation statement is a key set of financial statements, because that's where you see the movement of the funds. So during the audit process, what we do is we audit that appropriation statement at the end. So we compare it to the budget, we compare it to the adjustments estimate, we look at the requirements, whether the requirements were properly approved, we look at whether the requirements were within the limits allowed by the PFMA. So if the PFMA allows an accounting officer to do a requirement for 8%, and he's applied those principles, the requirement is 8% or less, then from an audit perspective, we cannot raise any audit finding. But from a oversight point of view, the committee can engage with management to say, but how do you budget? Because the budget also gets approved by this committee. So from an oversight point of view, you can engage to say, but year on year you're moving funds from this program to this program. How do you budget? You know, why do you always have these funds? What, you know, so that creates a mechanism for you. So that area is audited by. So if they do not comply with the Treasury regulations or the PFMA with shifting of funds or violations, we will raise it as an audit finding. In the question, there was also various HR elements that came out. There was mention made of the approved establishment. We do focus on some HR issues. We will, for instance, focus on appointments. And if we select a specific appointment during the audit process, we will look at, does the qualifications relate to the minimum specified qualifications, was the advertisement placed, and all of that. But remember, it's on a sample basis. But when it comes to the actual establishment, here the Department of Public Service and Administration is a key role player. So the Department of Public Services and Administration is the department that sets the norms and standards for establishments. And therefore, it's important that engagement should most probably then take place at that level. If the committee is concerned about the establishment of the department, that it might not be adequate or that it is not aligned, you know, that's an engagement that I suggest the committee should have with management and then maybe with the DPSA. So it's only on the performance information part which we currently don't audit. If I look at the indicators in that administrative part and I try to link it to the concerns raised, even if we would be auditing those indicators, I don't think it's going to address the specific concerns that the committee has raised. And therefore, my suggestion that you need to look at other avenues from an oversight point of view to specifically raise some of those questions. But just to reiterate again, from a financial point of view and from a compliance point of view, we do audit Program 1. It is not excluded from those two audit aspects. Honourable Chairperson, I trust that I've addressed all the questions. If I've missed anyone, please just remind me.
Thank you very much. Can I allow the two members, one will follow one another, in putting in their own input?
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the AG. For an enlightening presentation. Disappointing all the same because of the regression. I think I find that very, very alarming. And that particularly for us as a portfolio committee who've been on this portfolio since 2014, to find that we're regressing and not improving. And I find that most disturbing. I'd like clarification on a couple of things. And I'm on page 12, your presentation, page 12. Again, and this happened last year and it happened the year before, SCM procedures and monitoring has been a failure of the NDA and SASA pretty much year on year since we've been here. It's not being improved. And I know that you've had meetings with the minister and she's made commitments. That happens every year. It's easy to make a commitment. You've got to walk the talk. What does the AG do when year on year we have regression and not following supply chain management, not following supply chain management, not following supply chain management, and it does not get dealt with? I'd like to know if you have any authority on your side, what your authority is when you report these matters. One of the other concerns that I had is on on your presentation, page 13. With regards to SASA and the NDA, and that the NDA and SASA had findings on the reliability of reported targets. Are you saying that in their reporting to you and in their reporting for the reports for the AG, they are actually they are misleading you on information? Are they not being truthful? Why is that reliability an issue? And it actually comes up again when you look at page 19 of your presentation. No, sorry, page 18 of your presentation under SASA. It's red, accuracy, no, and your comment was no accuracy in reporting. I find that very, very concerning because it indicates to me that either somebody's got something to hide or there's no transparency. If you could give me some information on that. And on the material findings that should be read on the NDA, on CSO mobilization and CSO capacity building, that is the primary focus of the NDA. That is exactly what they are there to do, and yet it's the biggest area of concern. The bulk of my other questions, in actual fact, are in the audit itself. in the actual financial statements themselves, which would take us to go through. But I just want to reiterate something on that Bridget said earlier, because to me I find this very contradictory, and that is on your page 14 and page 15, where you say effective leadership generally must be green, but on the very next page senior management is yellow. I find that very contradictory. You cannot have your leadership cannot be effective if everything under it is the wrong colours. Then somebody is not leading. I hear what you're saying. I'm just saying I disagree with you. Because you can't have that situation. Leadership is what should be making everything underneath that green. Your leadership is not effective if everything underneath that is the wrong colour. And I think my only other concern there is obviously where we spent 100% of budgets, and SASA particularly, that's sitting on 35.3% on performance. I find that horrendously alarming. Chair, I will leave it at that. The rest of my questions are actually based in the financial reports themselves. We'll see. We can take that up with possibly the CFO when he comes in to present the budget. Thank you.
Yes, I was about to say, Honourable Member, some questions are supposed to be directed to the other side, that is the Portfolio Committee, because you are given an information in order for you to take action. So it is up to the Portfolio Committee if the findings are being repeated and the AG states that there's regression, we've dealt with this and made recommendations. They should, as AG, be asking us, what did you do with our recommendations? So I think we should also take some level of responsibility of the failures of the department under our nose. Once the information is available, it is actually authentic and scientific because it has gone through a test by a specialized unit. Ours is to say, you can't deny, there's proof, it's happening, and then we act on that. So I'm not opening a particular, I'm making a comment, and I would really request the Honourable Member not to respond to it, because it's not specific to you, it's specific to all the questions that have been raised. And can I have another hand? Because there were two hands. May Sondi?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. My question will go straight to the Department of SASA. Why the department did not take the disciplinary steps against to the officials who had incurred and permitted fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Number two, disciplinary hearing were not held for confirmed cases. Why? Number three, allegations not properly investigated. There is no evidence obtained. Why it is, I know, there's no follow-up for this to be taken. Don't you think that is this another way of the corruption?
Thank you very much. I'm about to bring a conclusion to the meeting, and I will allow AG to respond. But I need also to repeat the fact that the next meeting, the next item now, is going to be the department, and some questions should be kept for them, because it's them who must tell, because AG actually make findings and then highlight them for us to actually engage on. So some questions are directly to those people who know the recommendations were being referred to individuals with units, with departments and programs, and such people should be asked these hard questions. And if they don't give us answers, we know that as an executive authority, that must be instructed by the portfolio committee to take them on. Mm-hmm. Can I give you an opportunity?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. We'll keep the responses brief so you have more time with the department. The first question, which was the repetitive findings on and what authority does the Auditor General have, the authority actually rests with the department. So we get the findings, we come and share the findings with all the necessary stakeholders, and then the action goes back to the executive and to the ministers as well as the accounting officers to respond accordingly to all of these. So I think the answer came in with your colleague next to you, where she said, this is what I am going to post to the department. The clarification on that slide 14, I'm going to have a go at it as well. So you've got, now if you see the three elements we look at leadership, we look at financial performance management, and we look at governance. Now under leadership, you've got a whole host of items. You've got about six items there that you look at. Each of those items are relating to certain aspects we look at. So if you look at the one that's green and looking all okay, it's called effective leadership, but it's really dealing with the tone of the top, the ethics, where the ethics is being discussed in your organization, are people declaring when they need to. So it's just an overall questionnaire. The actual responsibility and the bulk of what actually needs to happen in terms of the oversight responsibility, whether they are effective HR management, the policies and procedures, are there policies and procedures in place? Are they being implemented? Are they being complied with? Are the audit action plans given the necessary attention? So you'll see all of that is yellow. Now what happens is, to make the final conclusion in terms on slide 5, where you see now senior management is yellow there, it is understandable because you can see majority of it is still yellow and red. So now you have to make an assessment on the assurance as a whole based on those various aspects you would have looked at. So, you know, we can certainly share more detail in one of our committees when we're actually discussing the what aspects we look at. But it is very, very, just to make sure that we're also looking at it in terms of consistency, we have various questions that we respond to under each of these matters, and then we overall evaluate. So just to show you that how you have the fact that majority of that checked out to be yellow, and how you have the assessment coming out on the senior management. And we will obviously have the more detailed stuff that we look at under each of those broader aspects. Thank you.
Chairperson, I'll ask Faisal and Tiens just to give a bit more detail on the performance information findings, because I think that is what I understood from the question. So if Faisal, if we can start off with you in the NDA environment, because the question was about whether there was misrepresentations made, and it's not a matter of misrepresentation. So management follows their processes throughout the year. They come up with a actual achievement. The ideal situation is that through the quarterly review processes and the day-to-day controls, that whatever is disclosed then there should be accurate. Then a normal audit process follows, where we call for supporting documentation to enable us to verify those numbers. And then it's when we call for the supporting documentation that we then find the differences between what management has reported and between the information that we have. Management does get an opportunity to also rectify those, so it's similar to the financial audit. But then it comes to a point where, when we come to conclusion, where we sometimes then it's a matter of that the supporting documentation and what is reported, or something is reported for which supporting information could not be provided, and that then creates for us the challenge. But I'll let Faisal just give you a bit more detail.
Thank you, Lawrence. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, yes, Lawrence is actually correct. That's the typical issue that happened within the NDA environment. The NDA changed their systems during the year, when they went into a new recording system to record all the information. And in that process, a lot of information, this only happened after the second quarter, a lot of information was not either brought onto the system from the first two quarters, or even if it was brought, it was taken into the incorrect place. All documentation was not properly recorded, and it's a daily processing, or the way they could have been training the staff in that period of how to load the information, when they did training to the CSOs, how the information should have been loaded, where should it have been loaded. So we found a lot of duplication of information between the different indicators. That was one of the reasons. So we could not place any reliance on that figure that was reported. We found information that should have been loaded was not loaded. On certain, we could not even find the documentation, nor could they send us the documentation. So those were the issues that we, and because of that, we could not place any reliability on those numbers recorded. So we've indicated that you've recorded a number, but we do not know should that number be X or Y, because based on information, we cannot place any reliance on any of those numbers that they put on the NDA that they reported on, because documentation did not just meet what they've indicated there. So that was a bigger problem that we had with the NDA.
Thanks, Faisal. Honourable Chair, Honourable Member. On SASART, a specific indicator. In our audit report, we have indicated on page 90, paragraph 16, it's with regard to the dispute on deductions for social grant payments that is resolved. It's a new indicator for SASART. They have implemented the system. Now, if we report on a percentage, we as auditors must first prove the 100% and then what you have disputed. In doing our completeness testing of what is recorded on that system, we identified that not all the items were recorded on the system. So it's also that the evidence are not all disclosed. So it actually decreased. We put the figure, our estimate figure there. We estimate it must be 33% against the department or SASA that have reported 36. But it's only related to one indicator. It's very technical, but this indicator is actually a new indicator for SASA. So they have rolled out policies, they've created a system where the report actually locked all the disputes. Now, for me as an auditor, when I audit, I must first prove that all the disputes are recorded in the system. Okay. So we go back to the detailed documentations where they have recorded the disputes, and we make sure that everything is recorded on their system. And then there will be ones that is, how can I say, addressed satisfactory to the beneficiary. Now, this reporting didn't refer to all the evidence that was. It's similar to what Faisal is raising. Not all the evidence was there. It wasn't updated. So after we consider all our evidence and re-project what the figure must be, we determined it must be 33% instead of the 36. And I've also acknowledged there is some weaknesses within the systems, and they're in progress of addressing that weakness. And it's a very specific indicator. The other indicators we were satisfied.
Well, thank you very much. Before we close, if you could help me with this little bit of clarity. When you make your oversight, have you not noticed that maybe the very functions that SASA or a department is mandated with, there are too much of this that they want to do, to an extent that it does appear that the prioritization become a problem? For example, if you look at what SASA would do, and then the priorities become very limited, looking into their annual audit, in trying to meet their objectives. But there's a long list of what is expected of them to do. If that's not the case, let's leave it. We will think about it. Because I think also what they set for themselves to achieve might overwhelm them when there is so much that they say to ensure this. But maybe we'll look into that narrative the other time. Can I therefore thank you very much for your presentation, while I appreciate the way members can engage with you, and even if sometimes you are not comfortable,
question might not be very make you comfortable, but members ask them. And if it's not written, their duty is to ask what the people ask them to ask. So that's the way they don't have to be scientific or to be what. If the communities are saying, please ask AG this question, they have to put it as it is. So I'm happy with the participation, our engagement, and also appreciate the notion that our members, the members of this portfolio committee, do not sleep on duty, given by the green that you gave to them. So I think we appreciate that. Human nature is that if you are not appreciated for the good you do, you tend to be a little bit disappointed. Thank you so much.
Take it to my office.
One, two.